Hey, everybody. This episode is brought to you by my friends at ExpressVPN, expressvpn.com/Charlie. Secure your device, anonymize your online activity, protect your action online. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Help our show out by also helping yourself protect yourself. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, a monster episode. Twice as fun, twice as long, but twice as important. I spent a lot of time prepping for this episode. There's a lot I wanted to say and warn you about what we're seeing and what you can do about it. We are entering what could be a decade of lockdowns. I explain why we are entering into what seems to be an endless war cycle. We talk about the war on poverty, war on drugs, war on illiteracy. We also go into the deeper reasons driving all of this. Medical apartheid is here. We warned about it. And later in the episode, you're going to hear a critique of mine of a Republican governor who said, it does not matter, just go find a new job. It doesn't matter if you don't want to get vaccinated. Just find a new job. Why is that wrong? Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. If you want to support our program, it's charliekirk.com/support. Angela from Alabama, thank you. James from Pittsburgh, thank you. At charliekirk.com/support. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, where we play offense with a sense of urgency to win the American culture war, you could do so at tpusa.com. That's tpusa.com. Start a chapter if you're in high school. Start a chapter if you are in college at tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Very important episode. Share this with your friends. The endless war, medical apartheid, and more. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Did you know that if you shop at Nike, they turn around and give your hard-earned dollars to pro-abortion groups like Planned Parenthood and the Population Council? Sinister folks, by the way. Did you know that Airbnb gave $500,000 to the Marxist BLM Incorporated organization? Your first vote is at the ballot box, but that isn't enough to defend our traditional Judeo-Christian values. Left-wing corporations who are woke are subverting our democracy. We're not a democracy, okay? Left-wing corporations are subverting our nation and our republic by taking money from conservative customers and giving it to radical organizations that support abortion, gun control, and critical race theory. You have another vote, a second vote at the checkout line, which is why there's a massively important organization called Second Vote that comes in. I know them very well. I've known them for years, and I'm so honored to partner with them. And the courageous people at Second Vote are exposing corporations for how they spend your money. So check out secondvote.com today. Second Vote is developing incredible tools and engaging the smartest minds in the country to help inform Americans' purchasing decisions. Their work is arduous, complex, and exhaustive, and it doesn't happen for free. So please support their work so we can defend our future from the woke Marxist mob. So here's what I want you to do. Do what I did. Just go right now to secondvote.com and subscribe. It's $50 a year. I know it costs something, but they have to be able to pay for their research. And the Black family, who are amazing people, by the way, have underwritten this effort for quite some time. But if you use the promo code Charlie, you get 50% off. That's $25 a year, everybody. Okay? That's literally $2 a month. And that's 50% off, so $25 a year. That's $2.5 a month at that, so that you can have the information you need on your next purchase. So join me. go to secondvote.com and subscribe with promo code Charlie. Maybe it's like, hey, I don't know if the car I'm buying, are they donating to Planned Parenthood? What about all these companies? Secondvote.com has every company ranked. It's a beautiful thing. Go to secondvote.com and subscribe with promo code Charlie today. I was having dinner with some friends over the weekend, and many times people said, Charlie, when is this going to end? The mask mandates are back. Closures of businesses are being floated. When is this going to end? And I told them something that they did not want to hear, which is that we are now probably entering another cycle and another phase of an endless war. My generation knows all about endless war. One of my earliest childhood memories was 9/11, September 11th, 2001. I remember where I was in the classroom that I was in right when that news hit. And our world changed forever. From that point forward, we were at perpetual foreign conflict with either the Taliban or Al-Qaeda or ISIS. And after 20 plus years of being in Afghanistan, the Taliban is actually stronger than it was even when we invaded. You see, Washington, D.C., they're good at endless conflict. Endless war has been almost a defining characteristic of the United States military strategy the last 20 years. I am reminded, cut two, of George W. Bush addressing a joint session of Congress about the war on terror. What if you were to tell George W. Bush and whispered in his ear on September 20, 2001, that many of your military interventions actually wouldn't work? Unfortunately, it would strengthen the enemy. Play cut two.
Our war on terror begins with Al-Qaeda, but it does not end there. It will not end until every terrorist group of global reach has been found, stopped, and defeated.
Every terrorist group found, stopped, and defeated. It's a very ambitious strategy. We're going to get to the whole idea of defining success and then being able to measure success and knowing when to end a certain cycle of conflict. An even bigger failure of endless war was a domestic war waged by Lyndon Baines Johnson and the Democrat Party on American poverty. Instead of focusing on fatherlessness or crime, instead of focusing on issues that tend to cause crime and poverty, Lyndon Baines Johnson decided to subsidize poverty, decided to subsidize behavior that would only make the war on poverty endless, therefore giving the Democrat Party and his successors something to constantly run on. Cut one, Lyndon Baines Johnson declaring war on poverty. Cut one.
And this administration today, here and now, declares unconditional war on poverty in America. And I urge this Congress and all Americans to join with me in that effort.
Now, of course, the war on poverty resulted in worse, and some would even say, and I would argue, just structural issues than before the war on poverty started. President Nixon declared war on drug abuse, saying that it was public enemy number one, the war on drugs over many decades, and now we have more overdose deaths in America than we do, even from the Chinese coronavirus, 96,000 people overdosed last year. We are on pace for even more this year. And that's on pace for even more than from dying from COVID. President Nixon declared an endless war on drug abuse, saying it was public enemy number one. Cut three.
America's public enemy number one in the United States is drug abuse. In order to fight and defeat this enemy, it is necessary to wage a new all-out offensive. I have asked the Congress to provide the legislative authority and the funds to fuel this kind of an offensive.
You see, when Washington politicians talk in terms of war, especially ones against unspecified, undefined objectives, you should be very nervous. You should be anxious. You should be skeptical. You see, the United States government has not won a massive effort to win a battle since the fall of the Berlin Wall. And we only won the battle against the Soviets because Ronald Reagan decided to make it a philosophical and ideological battle, and he was willing to do what was necessary. Now, when it comes to the war against the Chinese coronavirus, some in the media would say it's because we lack resolve. It's because we're not willing to mask up and stay at home. We're not willing to do what is necessary. Now, I think that actually might be partially true. I actually think it's partially true that Americans aren't willing to forsake their entire life for an entire decade just to get rid of a virus that has a 0.04% death rate. But I think there's actually four other more critical reasons as to why, if we are not careful, we are entering another cycle of endless war, like the endless war against poverty, the endless war against drugs, the endless war against terror, where we don't actually ever win, but instead the entrenched bureaucratic class gets more funding, more prestige, more promotions, more relevancy, while using fear as a propaganda tool to keep you in a state of obedience. Now, before I get into those four things, I want to tell you what some people are already floating out. Iceland has said that we have to be ready for 15 years of lockdowns. I'm reading and it says, Iceland may see recently reimposed safety protocols in place for 15 years, according to one of the Nordic countries' chief medical experts. It can happen no matter what the future holds, he says. This is what we've been saying all along, that there's no predictability in this. On June 26th, the Icelandic authorities chose to remove all domestic restrictions, but now they have reimposed them, saying that they could last well over a decade and a half. What if I told you that the entrenched medical class is no different than the people at the Pentagon, no different than the people that oversaw the social welfare blitzkrieg on behalf of Lyndon Baines Johnson that actually made America more structurally poor? What are we supposed to do when we are faced with these threats of endless conflict? Well, there are four major reasons as to why this is happening, and we're going to go through all four of them. This is a very serious issue as it impacts school closures, mandatory masking, and all of the other issues surrounding us, because we're not actually getting to a place where we're going to be able to declare victory against the Chinese coronavirus. Instead of the exact opposite, it is going to be a confusing, muddled, sometimes, almost always, frustrating endeavor that we are on. And the question that we should ask is it worth it? Is this the right thing to do? How serious is the threat of the Delta variant and the Chinese coronavirus? So to answer the question that a lot of you are asking, when is this going to end? Well, if the people in charge have their way, it's going to be another endless war where they get promotions, military type style contracts, endless funding from the treasury, and the enemy actually never gets defeated, but your liberty and your freedom gets eroded. If endless wars don't end in victory, why do we keep on doing them? Well, there's four major reasons. Let me start with a story about a true story from Chicago, Illinois. There was a street in southwest Chicago, the Cicero area, where every couple weeks there would be a business or a home that would all of a sudden wake up and they would have a brick thrown through their window. And there would be no real explanation for this. They didn't steal anything. But instead, there would be a brick thrown through the window. And so they would do what any sensible business person or homeowner would do. They would call the window repairman. And then all of a sudden, this started to spread to other neighborhoods and people got curious. So they launched a investigative task force of who is randomly throwing bricks through windows. And after a man decided to wait up all night and he got lucky, he caught the man in the act of throwing the brick through the window, and it was the window repairman. You see, it's good business to try and create a problem only you can solve. Why endless war? Because there's an incentive structure for that. Whether it be endless foreign war, defense contractors unfortunately benefit disproportionately. If it's endless war against the war on poverty, big business like Walmart, who take food stamps, are able to benefit disproportionately. If it's an endless war against drugs, you might say, well, who would possibly win at the endless war against drugs? Well, again, trust me, I'm all against a domestic war on illegal drugs. But when you turn a blind eye on the pharmaceutical companies, but a heavy hand on the drugs being dealt on the street corners in the inner cities, then maybe the biggest pharmaceutical companies benefit. You see, endless wars are great for big business. They can build it into their profit model. They can build it into their growth curve. Every year, we're going to need more drugs, more missiles. We're going to need more buildings. We're going to need more Section 8 housing. We're going to need more ability to provide for people with food stamps. There's an incentive structure behind endless war. The same way that the window repairman goes around throwing bricks through people's windows, Fauci and the pharmaceutical companies are begging for an endless war against the Chinese coronavirus. The same can be said for Amazon and the tech companies. They get stronger and more powerful the more we are locked down. When people still desire human connection, do you think Facebook's new company, Oculus, where you put on your goggles and you can create the world as you see fit, do you think that gets more desirable or less desirable when there's less live events, less people coming in contact with each other? Unfortunately, the multi-trillionaires, or the multi-trillion dollar companies, I should say, they are pushing for the 15-year lockdowns like Iceland because it only makes them permanently more powerful. We know this to be true. We know that Amazon is more valuable than ever before. We know the big banks are richer and wealthier than ever before. And we know that the billionaires in America made over $500 billion in the lockdown cycle this last year. Unfortunately, the first reason why we are entering into another cycle of endless war, why we are engaging and tolerating, and dare I even say entertaining, the Delta variant to the levels that are almost incomprehensible to a lot of people because the data does not support it, is because the people in charge are going to get very wealthy, powerful, and prestigious in their own minds if we lock down again. It's good business. It's good for their exit bonuses. You see, we must talk about this not just as a term, as certain people have their priorities backwards, which, by the way, is number two. We'll get to that in a second. But instead, that the people at the top levels of finance and our economy are actually wanting you to stay locked down. And it's not just the corporate actors, by the way. It's also the political actors. You see, blue states that were structurally bankrupt got massive bailouts from the federal government thanks to the lockdowns of the Chinese coronavirus. New York got bailed out. New Jersey got bailed out. Illinois got bailed out. At the cost of states that were fiscally sound like Texas, Tennessee, and Florida. You see, politicians would love to go through another round of lockdowns because they don't have to cut spending in their states. They don't have to challenge the public sector teacher unions. Instead, they'll get another $100 billion from the federal government that will easily bail them out. You see, the incentive structure almost lends itself to people that deal in the deeds of corruption and not innovation to want to keep you locked down. The U.S. national debt is expected to approach $89 trillion by 2029. Real inflation rate is estimated to be upwards of 10%. We are going backwards, and soon enough, the $1 million you have tucked away for your retirement might not even last you a year. Because debt is now growing faster than the economy, and the administration in Washington proposes another $6 trillion in spending, the situation isn't likely to improve anytime soon. Uncertainty is back, or did it ever really leave? I trust our friends at Noble Gold Investments. They can help you make the right play. Download a free gold investment guide at noblegoldinvestments.com. So why endless war, and are we entering into it? Let me tell you right now that the people that want to get us into another endless war cycle, this is their big offensive. These couple weeks, we are living through it right now. But is it worth it? The second thing we need to ask ourselves in a list of four things about why endless war that are much more critical things to talk about rather than our resolve is this the right thing to do? How big of a threat is the Chinese coronavirus? Well, every single day in the United States, according to data that is publicly available as of 2019, 1,800 people die of heart disease. Why don't we lock down Burger King, McDonald's, and Wendy's, and not lock down businesses of people that are trying their best to get by? In fact, why would we lock down gymnasiums when people are actually literally trying to get healthy? By the way, this is daily. Let me just reinforce this. This is daily. 1,800 people die every single day of heart disease, 1,640 of cancer, 470 by accident, 430 of chronic lower respiratory disease, 410 of stroke, 330 of Alzheimer's. And now COVID deaths are below 324. In fact, yesterday, there were 71 confirmed COVID deaths. 71 confirmed COVID deaths. And if you look at category by category, last year included, 0 to 17 years old, 340 people died involving with COVID-19. And Alex Berenson says that that is almost immeasurable statistically. 51,213 people died from all causes. From ages 18 to 29, 2,493 people died from COVID and 96,625 from all causes. From 30 to 39 years old, 7,145 people died from COVID-19, allegedly, and 137,000 people, 849, from all causes. You go category to category. Do you know that COVID was not the leading cause of death for any single age group, including last year, including 85 years and older, including 75 to 84? It was not the leading cause of death for any category or any group. Should we ban cholesterol? Should we lock down too much calorie intake? Or is it part of living in a free society? You're able to make choices and those choices have consequences. When you hear the panic stats, the Chinese coronavirus has seen infections rise 148% in the last 2 weeks and hospitalizations by 73%. You really want to get serious about public health? How about at the very least you say you're no longer allowed to advertise alcohol on television? How about you ban all alcohol? That would make America healthier. Not a big fan of alcohol personally, but I make that choice personally. You don't need a mandate to do that. We need to get our priorities right. Is this the right thing to do? Instead, we're being governed by a very small, vocal, and quite honestly, power-obsessed minority. What priorities should we have? The priorities we should first and foremost have is protecting children. Children's well-being, their development, their future. Children should come first in these equations. So when you try to actually think of a hierarchy of who you're trying to benefit the most, intergenerationally robbing from a 9-year-old, making them wear a mask all day long, making them be subject to an experimental vaccine, that would make sense logically, rationally, or morally. But that's exactly what we're doing. The third one is very self-evident, and there are exceptions to this. The third thing, though, is that massive programs tend to bulldoze individual choice. Now, sometimes massive programs can be helpful. Seatbelt laws have generally been a good development. Now, seatbelts can kill people. They have killed people because people have trouble getting out of cars in a car accident. They can get suffocated by it. But generally, seatbelts have been good for human mortality rates when it comes to automobile accidents. They're annoying. I don't like them. I don't think they should be overly policed, but I do think seatbelts should be encouraged. So massive programs can have a place, but they tend to bulldoze or steamroll or get in the way of individual choice. So you may say, Charlie, what's the rule then? Well, less on principle. Principle is important, but prudence. Use practical judgment. Use it by a case-by-case basis. Is this really a crisis? Is this something that we need to address? And if so, what is the potential downside? Well, that's the other thing. Is the downside of these lockdowns is significant. The rise in alcoholism, drug usage, young people self-harming. There's a massive downside. It's not as if you can crush the virus, whatever even that means, and have no cost on the other side. In fact, when you do these massive programs, like the war on drugs, or the war on poverty, or the war on illiteracy, like No Child Left Behind, or the foreign war in Afghanistan or in Iraq, they tend to demand larger and larger interventions. They actually tend to warrant more massive programs. Like, oh, well, that didn't work, so now we need another couple trillion dollars that were actually created by the intervention itself. Now, there are certain types of interventions that are necessary. For example, World War II. That's a unique time when people bought into a purpose bigger than themselves to defeat evil in two different hemispheres. These massive interventions can, at times, using prudence, practical judgment, and some would say even common sense, can be the right thing for a society to do. But only, and here's the rule, and here's why World War II is such a good example, if success can be clearly defined. If success can be written down on a piece of paper, what does success look like? Defeat the Nazis, fly our flag over Berlin, and make the Japanese surrender. Cool, got it. Now we know what we're fighting for. We know that it's going to cost something. We're going to rally for it. We're going to get this done in a couple years. Fine. The problem with the foreign war on terror, the problem with the war on poverty, the problem with the war on drugs, the war on illiteracy, and now this war on COVID with Fauci's own words and the leaked CDC documents call it a war on COVID. What does success look like? Is success now getting the death rate down to 50 a day? Because we had 71 confirmed deaths yesterday. Meanwhile, as I mentioned, we have 1,000 plus, in fact, 1,800 plus dying of heart disease. What does success look like? Massive interventions, when you cannot clearly articulate what success looks like, it almost never works. So then you have this unspecified, kind of confusing, very muddled objective. Oh, we're trying to beat the virus. What the heck does that look like, beating a virus? I know it sounds good. It's a bumper sticker for some, you know, public health bureaucrat that works for HHS or NIH. What does that look like? Massive interventions can only work when success can be clearly defined. And here's a very simple question that our leaders need to be asking, especially in the Republican Party, because the Democrat Party doesn't care, because they're seizing on these lockdowns for blue state bailouts, the Great Reset, currency deterioration, open borders, and remaking America. For them, the endless war on COVID is a gateway drug for redefining America in Marxist terms. Let me say that again. For the American left, the Chinese coronavirus and the subsequent lockdowns are a gateway drug to get long desired public policy objectives into law that only a crisis can facilitate. What if we beat the Chinese coronavirus, eradicate it, get rid of it, it never exists, and we lose the country? What if that happens? What kind of cost is there? What kind of measurement are our leaders actually using? And the reason is they're not using a measurement is because, going back to the first reason that I articulated, the incentive structure. Endless wars get people rich. Endless wars keep people in power. Endless wars can give generals medals. And in this sense, this is not an endless foreign conflict in a country. This is a domestic one. Dr. Fauci gets on the cover of magazines. He gets paid a lot of money. Fauci gets to be really important. He gets put on television. He gets lauded. In fact, he gets treated almost as if he's been canonized by the Church of Public Health. You drive through some neighborhoods in Washington, D.C., they have almost auras around Fauci's little smug face. Why would he want to give up that power? You know, if he kind of says, look, COVID is basically, we know what it is, we know how it operates, act prudently, don't do anything dramatic. If you're at the risk group, so be it. Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, vitamin D, don't overdrink. If you're overweight, get back in shape. Live your life. Liberty is beautiful. Thanks so much. I've enjoyed the show. All of a sudden, Fauci becomes less important. Instead, he wants to get all the medallions possible. He wants to play into this even more. He doesn't want to relinquish control. So the four major reasons as to why we're about to enter what could be a decade of lockdowns. Let me say that again. A decade of lockdowns is the incentive structure is totally perverse. Our priorities are backwards. The massive programs, as we well know, tend to bulldoze individual choice, and one intervention leads to another intervention. And finally, no one can define success. If anyone is listening out there that actually gets a chance to talk to Fauci, he refuses to come on our show. Ask him, what statistically does success look like? Again, World War II, raise the American flag over Berlin and get the Japanese to surrender. Once those things happened, we brought the troops home, we brought down our military spending, and we celebrated. What does that success look like when it comes to the Chinese coronavirus? 10 deaths a day, 5 deaths a day. We can never find the virus in a sample tube ever. What does success look like? I know what success looks like. We've already reached it. Well past it in the sense of we know treatments that work. People know how this operates, and we must prioritize the well-being of our children over the safetyism of some unclear objective. I do want to play some tape here about Fauci and Cut 10, about the framing of all of this. Remember, we are entering into an endless war chapter. They found their new war on poverty, illiteracy, war on terror, whatever you want to call it. And it's against an invisible virus, and they cannot define success. Play cut 10.
Are we headed towards a period once again where we're going to see lockdowns, businesses shutting down, masks routine for everybody, or is this potentially just a temporary setback?
Things are going to get worse. If you look at the acceleration of the number of cases, the 7-day average has gone up substantially. You know, what we really need to do, John, we say it over and over again, and it's the truth. We have 100 million people in this country who are eligible to be vaccinated, who are not getting vaccinated.
100 million people. They're the problem. Go find them. We're going to talk all about the forced vaccination strategy, and it's here. We have foreshadowed this moment, and it's here. But instead, I want to talk about what you can do about this endless war that's coming to you right now, is that you must, if you so choose, maybe you're cool with 15 years of lockdowns. Maybe 15 years of lockdowns doesn't scare you. Maybe you want your kids and grandkids to walk around in masks and be always afraid. Maybe you don't want them to live in the America that you lived in. That's fine. I've got some emails like that. They say, Charlie, safety is the most important thing for me, and I'm going to keep my kids and grandkids locked down until the public health officials tell me I can leave. I think that's insane, and I think that's a bunch of balderdash, and I refuse to do that. Here's the biggest thing you must do, is that at this possible moment, you must find instances where you say, I'm not going to comply. And then you must find the pressure points of people that decide to stand courageously against this decade of lockdowns that is now coming in and support those people. Pastors that refuse to lock down again. Businesses that refuse to lock down again. Politicians that refuse to mandate lockdown orders. You got to support those people publicly and vocally. And you must give politicians a sense of anxiety that if they support lockdowns, there's going to be a political cost. I'll give you a great example of this. Mark Kelly is running for the United States Senate seat as a Democrat incoming in 2022 in Arizona. Raphael Warnock is running in 2022 in Georgia. They have to hear from the voters in Georgia and Arizona that lockdowns and forced masks, if they don't speak out against it loudly and vocally, they're going to lose their Senate seat. Make the people in charge feel that there's a political cost to this. Make J.B. Pritzker in Illinois, who is definitely the least mobile governor in America, definitely the least agile governor in America, Make him know that there's going to be a cost, and he might lose the governor's race because of this. Make people feel that there's a political cost to these lockdowns. And I could tell you right now, this is a silent majority issue. 85% of the country does not actually want to go this direction. But unfortunately, we're being led by this minority that is very persuasive at getting on television and making you feel afraid. But persuasion is no longer working. Instead, they're going to use force. You need to speak out, and then you need to have that testing moment where all of a sudden, if LA, they make you wear a mask in a grocery store, you don't do it. So what are you going to do, arrest me? Because this is how it works now in San Francisco and LA. You go and loot $700 worth of stuff, they don't arrest you. You come in without wearing your mask properly, they call the police. And guess what? The police aren't going to arrest you anytime soon. What I'm calling for is civil disobedience, non-compliance, making noise and pushing back against this tyrannical push to make us in another cycle of endless war where we spend trillions of dollars, our country becomes less free and unrecognizable, our children lose their future. There's no doubt in my mind that Americans' trust in the media is at an all-time low. I mean, when you turn on so-called respected news channels, all you get is propaganda, shameless virtue signaling, and blatant disregard for the truth. It's an insult to the intelligence of the American people, which is why my good friends at the Daily Wire, great people, are providing an alternative. From the Daily Wire newsroom comes Morning Wire, a morning news podcast that gives you the facts you need to know first. Brought to you by the Daily Wire editor-in-chief, John Bickley, and co-host, Georgia Howe. Morning Wire will wake you up with the latest developments in politics, sports, culture, and education, all with a heavy emphasis on the truth. Episodes drop every weekday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. So go subscribe now to hear the trailer. It's super important because it's challenging the New York Times Daily. This is rooted in truth. And if you like what you hear, leave a five-star review if you want to help the Daily Wire provide a source Americans can wake up and trust. Each episode will be short with only enough room to fit the facts, so you can be sure your breakfast isn't going to be served with a side of someone else's agenda. Seriously, go subscribe to the Daily Wire Morning Wire. It's called the Morning Wire. Go subscribe right now. The United Kingdom has just announced that they are going to be rolling out 32 million booster vaccines by next month to all those over the age of 50. What great business model, isn't this? You need a booster on top of the booster because the first vaccine wasn't as effective as we thought it was. Remember, when you're in an endless war cycle, which is what we're about to get into, then the intervention ends up being not sufficient, so you need a bigger intervention to try to solve the first intervention. And don't you dare change the leadership class because they're the only ones that could possibly know how to fix the intervention because they're the ones that solved, that tried to solve it with the first intervention even though it wasn't big enough because the intervention wasn't as big as it should have been. People like Boris Johnson and people like Fauci, they found their new campaign of relevancy. This particular one, the Chinese coronavirus, is powerfully unique because it really does unite a sinister triumvirate, you could say, of forces that are typically at odds. Number one, the media loves this because they get ratings. People read their stuff. They stay relevant. Fear sells. Number two, massive companies, as we've mentioned, literally have their competitors shut down. It's great for Amazon not to have the little small business in Watertown, Wisconsin, be able to stay open when they could just deliver packages and over-inundate the market, dump the market with their own products, and create a monopoly. And of course, then politicians and government leaders remain in power thanks to misleading fear-mongering. You see, ending things require a goal and a willingness to revert back to a sense of normal. But we're actually getting further and further away from that sense of normal. We're getting further away from trying to get back to how things were. And it's almost like the people in charge are trying to force a confrontation. It's almost like they want a conflict. If the motivation of our leadership class was to try to almost artificially try to turn people against each other, this is what they would be saying and doing. In cut 7, Cuomo says, it's just unbelievable. The Delta variant mutates to a vaccine-resistant virus, and now we're back to where we started. So now we need a new vaccine for this mutation. What a great business model for the pharmaceutical companies. Good job, Andrew Cuomo.
Worst case scenario, a large number of unvaccinated get sick. And even worse than that, the Delta variant mutates to a vaccine-resistant virus. And now we're right back to where we started. Everybody has to get vaccinated again. And by the way, you have to come up with a vaccine for this new mutation.
Oh, so it wasn't sufficient, Andrew Cuomo? Andrew Cuomo is now saying, you know what we didn't do enough of in our country? Segregation. Andrew Cuomo wants to make segregation great again. For the 100 million people that have decided not to take the vaccine, I being one of them, he's saying, you know what? You can't shop here. You can't eat here. You can't go into this hotel unless you prove that you took the experimental vaccine that I just told you might not even work in the clip before. Play cut five.
Private businesses, I am asking them and suggesting to them, go to vaccine-only admission. Go to vaccine-only admission.
Medical apartheid. They will now deny service based on your personal medical decisions. What if all of a sudden McDonald's says, you know, we're not going to serve people with lupus? Or what if Walmart said, you're not allowed to shop here if you have AIDS? You think that would be tolerated? Or how about this? What if Home Depot or Lowe's or Chipotle or any of these major corporations said, you know what? You're going to have to fill out a medical waiver before you eat here. And if we find something disturbing in your medical history, you're not going to be able to eat here. Now, apparently the lawyers are saying this is perfectly legal. I did not know that medical discrimination is legal in our country. I thought there was some sort of laws about HIPAA privacy, medical privacy. You can't ask people about their own medical decisions. People say none of that actually applies to vaccines because it's not considered to be medicine. The Department of Justice declares it's legal. That doesn't mean it is. They're going to get sued, and they are getting sued. This is medical apartheid. So maybe basically Andrew Cuomo basically comes out and he says, you know what we didn't do enough of in our country? We didn't segregate enough. Mayor Bill de Blasio basically says, look, here's what we got to do. We've got to shake people at this point and say, come on now. We tried voluntary. We could not have been more kind and compassionate. And this, I want you all to take this to heart. This is such an important clip I'm about to take. About to play. This is so important. If you just remember one thing out of all the commentary that I say this month, Bill de Blasio ran as a Workers' Party communist style candidate. He won as giving power back to the people. This clip right here is so important because it shows that it's never about the decentralization of power, it's never about the democratization of the government. What it really is about is eventually an authoritarian style government. It always bends back to that. Bill de Blasio ran on promises of giving power to the people and workers' rights and trans rights and we're going to unite together. It's always gibberish. It's a bunch of nonsense. It's always give me the power with the clenched fist and I will destroy our enemies. Cut eight.
We've got to shake people at this point and say, come on now. We tried voluntary. You know, we could not have been more kind and compassionate as a country. Free testing everywhere you turn. Incentives. Friendly, warm embrace. The voluntary phase is over. We can keep doing those things. I'm not saying shut it down. I'm saying voluntary alone doesn't work. It's time for mandates.
It's time for force. Breaking, hundreds of staffers at a pair of San Francisco hospitals have tested positive for COVID-19, the majority of whom were fully vaccinated but became infected with the Delta variant. The United Kingdom government has just released a 26th report on the adverse event reactions to the COVID-19 vaccines. The UK government have released their 26th report highlighting adverse reactions to the COVID-19 injections that have incurred since the rollout on the 8th of December 2020. So here's a really interesting question. 100 million people doing something or not doing something is a big number. That transcends political lines. Donald Trump, according to the count that is publicly published, got 75 million votes, maybe 76 million. If 100 million people decide not to do something, wouldn't it, de Blasio, Cuomo, or Fauci, wouldn't it do you some good to listen to them? I was eating last evening, a couple evenings ago with my wife, and a woman came up to me and she said, I'm a liberal. I'm not taking this vaccine even if they kick me out of the country. I said, why? She said, it just doesn't make sense. And I turned to her, I said, this is why the American Project is so beautiful. You can make a decision. I can make a decision with different politics, and no one can force us to do otherwise. Unless they do. And that's what we have to dive deeper into. Did you ever read the fine print that appears when you start browsing in incognito mode? It says that your activity might be visible to your employer, your school, or your internet service provider. How can they even call it incognito? To really stop seeing people from seeing the sites you visit, you need to do what I do and use ExpressVPN. Think about all the times you've used Wi-Fi at a coffee shop, a hotel, or even at your parents' house. Without ExpressVPN, every site you visit could be logged by the admin of that network. And that's still true when you're in incognito mode. I mean, do you really want your parents to see what you've been looking at? ExpressVPN is an app that encrypts all of your network's data and reroutes it through a network of secure servers. Your private online activity stays just that, private. ExpressVPN works on all your devices and is super easy to use. The app literally has one button. You tap it and connect, and your browsing activity is secure from prying eyes. So stop letting strangers invade your privacy online. Protect yourself at expressvpn.com/charlie. Use my link at expressvpn.com/charlie to get 3 extra months free. That's expressvpn.com/charlie to learn more. You know, if the government of the United States, which is run by Biden and his cartel, if they actually cared about the Chinese coronavirus, why are they allowing thousands of people to enter our country unvaccinated, because they say that's the solution, untested, into the interior of the United States? Why would that be the case? I said this previously. I want to reiterate this. This is their big push. I have not seen a push for something so unpopular, so sinister, as quickly as we are seeing right now, with total disregard for any sort of political price associated. So we are now entering into medical apartheid. I'm going to define what that is. So segregation is nothing new. The Democrats invented it and perfected it. The Democrats were the party of slavery. They were the party of discrimination, the party of intimidation, then the party of control of black voters through government programs, through their endless war on poverty, which we've covered in great detail. The promise of the American system, as detailed in the greatest political document ever written, the United States Constitution, is to trust and allow people to make choices without the government forcing them. Now, there are limitations on this. There are exceptions, and you must use prudence, practical judgment, precedence, but usually we yield on the side of rights, not on the side of common good. That is the American tradition and one that I will defend. This is especially true with experimental vaccines and invasive public health orders. So it's one thing to tell people, hey, put on a seatbelt, and if not, you're going to get a ticket. I wouldn't overly police it, but I think that seatbelts generally and the push towards seatbelts, as annoying as they are for me, I can't stand it. I think generally that kind of social conditioning hasn't been that harmful to humanity. In fact, I was riding with somebody recently, and I'm glad that I had the habit of putting on the seatbelt. It's annoying. It drives me nuts. I don't like getting tickets for it. But that's not exactly the same sort of issue. We're talking about an experimental vaccine where you have adverse events being re- being reported. You have all these other issues, two totally different things. So the reason why mandates are so dangerous, there's a couple reasons. And why segregation is obviously immoral, and we're entering – I mean, Shake Shack has just said that they're not going to allow unvaccinated people to shop – to eat there, whatever. And I guarantee you other places are going to follow. I guarantee it. Is that there's this principle that when you mandate something and when you do something from the top down or from a government order, that the error of being wrong or the potential downside of being wrong – far outweighs the upside of being right. So when you mandate something to everybody, the first question you need to ask those politicians is, what if you're wrong? What all of a sudden if this has a downside that you aren't experiencing? What if this doesn't actually prevent against the virus like you said it have? You says it has. The cost of a downside of a widespread order is greater than the upside. So if this vaccine is actually not as effective as people say, if all of a sudden there are all these adverse events and more so coming for years, then all of a sudden mandating it and not making it optional, all of a sudden force people to then live in a set of circumstances that was not of their own choosing. That's immoral. And the third, and this is so obvious, of why mandates are immoral and not always immoral, but why mandates can be immoral and they're troublesome. That's a better word, is that widespread orders don't allow for adjustment, nuance, or customizing. Instead, it forces you to live under the one-size-fits-all tyranny of a largely unelected minority. And a great example is the young lady that came on our podcast who is going to go to BYU Hawaii. They said that students have to be vaccinated, professors do not, and teachers do not. And she had a doctor's note that said she could die if she got the vaccine. BYU Hawaii says, we don't care. We actually have another email from a BYU student where they're saying the same thing. Really weird that BYU is doing this. Newsweek.com, 62% of Americans support vaccine mandate. Doesn't matter. We don't take a popular vote on rights in this country. Doesn't matter if 62%, 70%, you got to go through the process, and it's a long one, and you're going to fail to try to get laws into place to mandate vaccines. Now, they're going to try other ways. We're going to go through that. They're going to try ways through employers, which unfortunately someone we're going to talk about stands against. But if we were in the French, the Italian, or in the British system, that sort of poll would then become law quickly. The United States Constitution protects your natural rights from an up or down, immediate, quick, hasty vote. Instead, it says, hold on a second. You're going to have to make an argument over a long period of time in both the courts, the legislative and the executive sector, and on the state-based model before such vaccine mandate comes to pass. When I am a stickler for language, it's for a reason. I'm a stickler of republic versus democracy, because a republic, you look at this poll and you say, oh, really? 62% of Americans support vaccine mandate. Have a nice day. You can consult a judge. Aristotle famously said that man was a rational animal. At times, I doubt that. I'm laughing because I see all sorts of extraordinary acts of stupidity. But generally, the ability to speak and reason is evidence that we are rational creatures. We're able to make decisions in the world that allow us to travel, that allow us to create structures, build buildings, heat and cool those buildings, be able to mass produce food. And so if we are generally a rational animal, and I'm chuckling because it doesn't always seem that way, but it's true, then why isn't Fauci and the others trying to persuade us? Why are they treating us like golden retrievers? Make them take the vaccine, no conversation necessary. If 100 million people say, hold on a second, you're telling us it does this and we don't want to do it, why do you think 100 million people are skeptical? That's more than Trump voters, by the way. The least vaccinated group in America is Black Americans. Why is Fauci picking on the Black population? Is Fauci a racist? He does want segregation. Maybe Fauci is a racist. But we're not leftists, so we don't say that stuff here. Look, I do believe that incentives can be helpful at times. This is a conservative argument, not a libertarian argument. For example, incentives around family creation. I'm a big fan of trying to have public policy, trying to have more American-made children, or born children, I should say, not American-made, a more American-born children, I guess American-made would be right, and not having as much foreign, both legal and illegal migration to this country. But the reason why I support government incentives for family creation is that's a multi-thousand-year proven moral good. Families, lots of children, good for people, good for connection, good for social well-being, good for the nation. Okay. Now, a libertarian argument would say, okay, I'm against the vaccine because it's experimental, and I'm against having sort of incentives to have a lot of children because who am I to say which one is better? I think this argument falls apart very quickly. Value judgments are made all the time by governments. However, when there's confusion, and there is no confusion about having children, by the way, that is a non-negotiable. That's not to say that people don't have children can't be happy, but the general trend is that having children and getting married is a way that you can live a flourishing and fulfilling life, and your society, by definition, is then able to replicate itself and continue, especially if that society is a beautiful country like the United States of America. But when you have uncertainty, this is where the founding fathers were so clairvoyant. They were so special and unique. When you have confusion or uncertainty, or you have people asking questions, then you must immediately yield towards rights. What do I mean by that? When you don't know the answer to the question, or maybe you think you know, but there's a lot of different opinions, you got to go towards rights. You have a right of refusal and you have a right of acceptance. That is what the natural rights doctrine is all about. That is the promise of the American project and Constitution. I don't know about this vaccine. I don't like it. Cool. Thanks to our system, you don't have to take it. I don't know, I'm reading a lot of different stuff and people are saying one thing and doing another. You don't have to take it. Same thing with firearms, by the way. We do not have mandatory firearm ownership in this country. I don't know, I don't like guns. I don't know how to use them. Okay, you don't have to use it. Don't prevent someone else from getting it. Forced or rushed or experimental medicine is not a multi-generational proven good like incentivizing people to have children. And again, this is a conservative argument, not a libertarian argument. Just want to be very clear. I have a soft spot for certain libertarians on certain issues, not on this sort of thing, because the founders then said, look, we are going to design a system that should allow you to be able to say no. I'm not going to have forced speech. I'm not going to have to worship someone I don't want to worship. And I should be able, and this is a conservative argument, not a corporatist argument, and now we're going to get into it. I should be able to keep my job and have a sustainable wage without having to violate my own medical decisions. So a friend of mine, someone who I've known and defended, I tweeted something over the weekend, and it's a friend of mine, and I texted her. I said, hey, can you help me make sense of this? I'm not going to be nasty or mean like a lot of people on Twitter were over the weekend. I don't like that. I am going to comment where I fundamentally disagree with her on this as a friend. And that's Governor Kristi Noem. Governor Kristi Noem came out and she said that workers whose employers are mandating a vaccine for continued employment have the power to say no. Our robust economy and job market gives them the option to find a new employer that values personal choice and responsibility and doesn't force mandates on their employees. That is a corporatist libertarian argument. That's not a conservative argument. Harmeet Dhillon, in response, said, quote, I want to make sure I get it. The state can also have the power to make vaccination status a protected employment category. That would be a bold move. So as conservatives, not as libertarians, again, I agree with libertarians on plenty of things, but this is a conservative program. We believe that things that have lasted for a little while should not be uprooted for bad reasons. It's a general conservative principle. For example, if you live in South Dakota and you have worked at the same place in Mitchell, South Dakota, or in Aberdeen, South Dakota for 20 years, and you've been a faithful and loyal employee, and you enjoy your job, and you enjoy the people around you, you should not all of a sudden be forced to take medicine or go find a new job. That is an overly simplified, not protective of individual rights argument, especially in confusing times. Other people agreed. Joe Sneb said, don't like your employer's vaccine rules? Noam says, find a new job. Again, that sounds so easy, but I'm not going to yield that point. After the 500th email I've received here on the Charlie Kirk Show of people that have said, Charlie, are you trying to tell me I now have to take the vaccine or lose my career? I'll give you an example. In Hawaii, Charlie, how do I keep my job? My employer, a private university in Hawaii, directed all employees to provide a vaccine card or submit to testing or demand to wear a mask and face shield at all times. I want to work, but I find these demands unreasonable. Help? ? Conservatives should be unafraid to intervene and help our voters and our citizens to be able to make medical decisions if their employer decides to infringe on them. We as conservatives should say vaccine mandates from the government are wrong and vaccine mandates from the corporations are wrong. Discrimination is generally a really bad thing. They might say, well, Charlie, what do you mean generally? Well, I do believe that religious schools should be able to have religious tests. Obviously, that's a form of discrimination. We don't like using the D word for that, but it is discrimination. When it comes to medical decisions, though, we shouldn't all of a sudden be screening people for lupus, rheumatoid arthritis. Like, oh, sorry, you can't work here because your medical history is questionable. And so the argument that Kristi Noem is making, and I don't know if she actually tweeted this, is a Chamber of Commerce style argument. Don't like it? Just move to New York City. Come on, just pack up the car and go find someone that reflects your values. Libertarians make this argument because they don't believe there's anything special or anything unique about having a bond to your land, your area, the customs, your family, or tradition. We as conservatives believe that if it's not necessary to change something, it's necessary not to change it, as Lord Falkland would say. That uprooting, chaotic, disruptive type change can have its place in a market, but if it's overdone and we overindulge in that type of process, then all of a sudden you can have societal chaos and you lose the ties that bind you together. Will Chamberlain tweeted, I'm reading from dailywire.com, you're the governor of your state. If you don't intend to protect your citizens, resign and let someone else do the job. I'm not going to say resign. I'm not saying that. Governor Noem is a friend of mine. But I'm failing to understand this argument where all of a sudden you are going to tell someone that loves their job and supports their family that, oh yeah, just go find another job. It's not a big deal. That's you imposing your own simplistic view of the world on people that might have roots to an area, a community, a skill, or a trade. Conservatives should stand for things that last and matter. And if people don't want to have to quit their job because they're working, which is an objective moral good, by the way, working is an objective moral good, we should defend them against the creeping autocrats that want to force them into compliance. The Bible tells us that wisdom begins with the fear of the Lord. And this guy that is very big, I mean, he is buff. I'll tell you what, this guy is massive. You've probably seen this video a couple hundred times. I think I was texted this video 200 times in the last 5 days. Just random, Charlie, you see this, Charlie, you see this? Yes, I know, yes. He definitely has wisdom and he sees forward. I'm not saying he's a prophet. I'm just saying that he might see things that happen before they happen. It is creepy how well he was able to predict all of this. It's lighthearted Media Matters. Relax. I'm not calling him Elijah. Okay. Cut 15, Jim Bro, or Buff Nostradamus, or whatever you want to call him, or highly flexed Isaiah or something, or Jim Bro Nehemiah. All right, I'm done. From early 2020, predicted more lockdowns and the ineffectiveness of the vaccine. It's a two-part clip. It's worth listening. Play tape.
Don't need a mask. The mask is about compliance because they know Canadians like to do what they're told. So if they tell you you have to wear a mask, next they're going to tell you you have to contact trace. Then they're going to tell you you have to take the vaccine. And because Canadians like to do what they're told, they're hoping that everyone just complies. And then guess what, kids? Once you take your vaccine, like a dumb person that doesn't know any better, they're going to tell you, sorry, the vaccine isn't as effective as we thought it was going to be. So now you still got to wear your mask, still got to get contact trace, still have all the restrictions and social distancing, and still take your vaccine. It's a perpetual cycle that you never get out of. And it's a way to take your rights, your freedoms, close your business, take your wealth. Why? So you become dependent on government. Why? If you're independent, the government works for you like it's supposed to. If you depend on the government to give you a paycheck to feed your family every month because they closed your business on you, now the government doesn't work for you. The government rules you. So instead of a middle class, we have the government, upper class, and the lower class dependents that rely on the government to survive. In other words, we have a slave class, and that's what they're trying to do. It's that simple.
He predicted the whole program before it even started. I want to just kind of summarize all these points together to give you an idea of how they are marching forward, literally. Cut 19, Joshua Johnson says that it's time for a revolutionary war to push vaccinations. They are not playing around, everybody. They're calling it a war. They're acting like it's a war. They are trying to provoke some form of conflict. Cut 19.
This fall marks 240 years since the Revolutionary War ended. Perhaps it could mark the end of another war if we fight it with everything we've got. See, America's fight for freedom only began with rebellion. It ended with wisdom. Just know that our young country depended on more than firing bullets. It depended on taking shots, the kind of shots that save lives. Sick of the mandates, tired of the restrictions? You want your freedom back? Maybe consider doing what George Washington did.
You know, I'm looking at the Constitution here. Nowhere does it say in the preamble anywhere, thou shall only have freedoms and rights if you get the Pfizer vaccine. We the people, in order to make AstraZeneca rich, to try and boost corporate profits for Moderna, do say that we try to perform a more perfect union for only the vaccinated. You see, the founding fathers with the longest lasting political framework in history, the United States Constitution, they gave us the tools to fight this. We must sue. We must not comply. We must lean on the courageous governors and leaders that say no more, do not comply, that stand up for their employees against the HIPAA violations that are happening, that say that employers cannot mandate vaccines, schools cannot mandate vaccines, and governments cannot mandate vaccines. Until we have Republicans that stand up for that, Republicans are going to be nothing more than the spokespeople for the Chamber of Commerce. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. If you want to support our program, go to charliekirk.com/support. Thanks so much for listening. God bless you guys. Speak to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.